Today's topic, I can call it unitarity in 2D CFTs and hopefully singular vectors. So previous couple of lectures, we are discussing conformal blocks and also like free fields partially. So conformal blocks, they were giving correlation functions. For generic values of C and also H bar. Why I say generic? Because in our formulas we were inverting Kac-Shapovalov form. So we were using Q, which was inverse of S, and S is matrix of scalar products. And when we were doing our computations, we were assuming that S can be inverted. But that's not always the case. Sometimes determinant of S is equal to zero. And in this case, something weird is happening to our formula because the metric cannot be inverted. So what's next? Apparently it's a very interesting topic when determinant of S is equal to zero. And it like studying the cases when it happened, we can invent so this is like breakdown of unitarity naively. Because we have zero norm states. I will discuss it in more details a bit later. Naively. Which is not good. Because if we want to have some proper quantum field theory, we want it to be unitary. But apparently, studying this breakdown of unitarity, we can get to so-called minimal models. Which are by definition models with finite number of primaries. So this breakdown of unitarity, it might be rescued by modding out all the fields with bad unitarity properties. And modding out everything and also looking for how operator product expansions are working, we can get to these models. And this is our holy grail for this course because one particular example is Ising CFT. That's where we are going to. When I say breakdown of unitarity, I mean that in good QFT, we don't want to have states such that chi tensor product, scalar product chi, is less or equal than zero. Because this is quantum mechanically bad. Because in quantum mechanics we often interpret these kind of things as probabilities or similar things.
and we don't want them to be negative in any case. So it's just, yeah, therefore it's called unitarity. Okay, so today I will be mostly studying cases when this can occur. So the Hilbert space of 2D CFTs as we discussed many times, it can be represented as a direct sum over all primary operators of, and before I was telling that this is like tensor product of holomorphic and anti-holomorphic part of, yeah, holomorphic and anti-holomorphic, like Wehrmann module. And again, as we discussed many times, scalar product between states from these Wehrmann modules, mu h lambda h prime, is non-zero if, yeah, so it's necessary condition, can be non-zero if h equals to h prime, and also mu is equal to lambda, where absolute value of mu is a sum over I from 1 to some number n mu I. And I will be calling today this number to be level. So like these numbers, they are levels. This is very helpful because, also holomorphic and anti-holomorphic parts, they are independent. And this is very convenient because basically we can study unitarity on the level of each Wehrmann module. And we can, if we find in which cases a scalar product is well defined in a Wehrmann module, we are good because then using this we can make statement about the whole Hilbert space. So this thing, it's called S lambda mu, depends on H and C. So existence of negative norm state is equivalent to existence of negative eigenvalue of SL. And I will call by S with L in round brackets to be restriction of Kac-Shapovalov form on states of level L. Because this form is block diagonal, I can study it block by block. Yeah, the reason for this is pretty obvious because SL can be, as a Hermitian form, it can be diagonalized by conjugation with some unitary matrix. And when this unitary matrices, they can change existence of negative norm state. And for diagonal matrix, it's obvious that, we just have to look for eigenvalues if we are looking for negative norm state. Uh, So in this problem, we basically have only two parameters, which are central charge and conformal weight of our primary field. So we can look for determinants of SL as functions of H or of C and H. And yeah, why it's good idea? Because we know that if there is a zero, so any eigenvalue can change sign. If and only if determinant of sum of S of L is equal to zero. So what we will be doing for the next couple of minutes, we will be looking for a plane of C and H, and we will be looking for curves. Yeah, and this is a very abstract thing, but we will be looking for curves where determinants of these blocks, they are becoming zero. And if we find the domain where all the eigenvalues are non-vanishing, and then we have a domain where there is no zeros of any of these blocks, then we are good in this domain. Then the whole domain, in the whole domain, the theory is unitary, because no eigenvalues are vanishing, and if no eigenvalues are vanishing, no eigenvalue can change sign. Is this clear idea? Okay. So first I want to impose a quite naive unitarity bound. So let's consider just this kind of state. So definitely we want this cover product to be greater than zero, because this is some vector. And using Virasoro algebra commutation relations, we can find that this is H. Here we have 2n times L0 plus C over 12 n squared minus 1 times n, and projection on H. And this is, assuming that square product of H and H is 1, this is 2n times H plus 1 over 12 C n times n squared minus 1. And this should be true for any n. Since this is true for any n, this term can be arbitrarily big compared to this term. If we keep C and H fixed, this term can be as big as possible. Therefore, we want C to be positive, because if C is negative, if C is negative, then for n big enough, this term will always be bigger than this term if we keep C and H fixed. So this will give negative number. This is like very naive bound. What else? So let's go over determinants of our blocks. So L equal to 1. L equal to 0 doesn't give anything. L equal to 1. This gives us a state like L1, L-minus 1, H, which is basically the same computation, but it doesn't contain C. So it's just 2H. And this is always have to be bigger than zero, which means that H should be also bigger than zero. So we should not consider the whole plane of C and H. We only have to consider one quarter of the plane. So only positive values. Yeah, let's consider L equals to 2. From the tutorial, we remember that for L equals to 2, there is a 2 by 2 matrix. So we have two states. We have L minus 1 squared times H, and we have L minus 2 times H. And for these two states, we have 2 by 2 matrix given by 4H plus C over 2, 6H, 6H, 4H, to H plus 1. Yeah, let's compute the determinant of this matrix. Yeah, so it's some very explicit polynomial function on H and C. If you think for a second, you can also predict what is the degree of this polynomial in H, and also in principle you can predict what is degree in C. So, and this polynomial can be factorized. And let me introduce some notation here. I will call roots of this polynomial as h12 due to reasons which will become more clear later. And yeah, these roots, they are functions of C. Some very explicit functions. And you can ask, what does it look like? What are these curves on the plane? And apparently, this curve looks like that. It starts from C equal to zero, H equal to zero. And by curve, I mean union of H12 equals to H and H21 equals to H. So like vanishing set of this determinant. So one branch is starting at C equals to zero, H equals to zero, and it goes to C equal to one. And then it goes back to H axis. And it intersects also in some other point. And also we have third branch, obviously, which is H equal to zero, which goes here. Where determinant is positive? So the determinant is positive, obviously, when h is very big, and yeah, basically for any value of c, or this term dominates and determinant is very big, which means that somewhere here, and yeah, big and positive, somewhere here, the determinant is positive. And when we cross this curve, the multiplicity of the root is 1 for each root. So here the determinant would be negative, and here it's positive again. Therefore, and yeah, the determinant is a product of two eigenvalues. And yeah, of two eigenvalues. And it's easy to check that here both eigenvalues are positive, here one eigenvalue becomes negative. And here also both are positive. So this is non-unitary domain, because here we have one negative eigenvalue. On the boundary of this domain here, where determinant is 0, there exists null state E, state of zero norm. And these states will be very important for us in the following, but now we more care about negative norm states. In principle, we can repeat the same for bigger, for yeah, higher levels L. And apparently, there is a general formula. And it's called Katz determinant formula. So the formula is following: determinant of the form on level A, L, is given by some explicit prefactor times product over integral numbers R and S greater or equal than 1 with product smaller or equal than L. And here we have H minus H RS of C with some multiplicity P of L minus R times S. Yeah, and we have a couple of objects here. We have these ALs, we have Hs, which are generalization of roots which we had above, and we have these multiplicities. So who are these characters? P of N is a number of Jung diagrams with L, with n boxes. So this is something which we discussed before when we were discussing Verma modules. So again, the same combinatorial object appears here, and in general, it appears quite often in representation theory. The perfector AL equals to product over, this is some explicit product, which doesn't matter much for us. But still, it can be computed. It's positive. The only property which is important is that this perfector is positive. And the most important thing is our values of this HRS as functions of central charge. This is equal to some H0 plus 1 over 4 R alpha plus S alpha minus squared, where H0 is this, and alpha plus minus is that. So it's some very explicit function of central charge. And this is a beautiful formula because on one side, it's just coming from Virasoro algebra. We don't need anything else except of Virasoro algebra. And on another side, the whole unitarity question of CFTs is more or less contained in this formula. It's also easy to notice. It's a simple computation that for R and S equal to 1 and 2, this general formula, it reproduces that formula. So in the square, like alpha square, this like sum, this like product of alpha plus times alpha minus. And also alpha plus square, alpha minus square, they will give you this term with roots. And also there is like 5 minus c, which is coming from H0, and those terms where squares are, square roots are getting squared.
Sophie Nicola, I'm confused about the bounds of c. So c should be always from 0 to 1?
No.
Can be about 25 as well, right?
Yes, I mean, so basically zero can be from zero, sorry, C can be from zero to infinity. But if your root is imaginary, this means that this curve, it doesn't render there. Yeah.
Okay, why it should be positive, sorry?
What should be positive?
Central charge, why it should be always like
We just discussed it at the beginning. It was like the most naive bound.
The first one.
It's just very basic thing.
And so one, it becomes imaginary, or that's what I understood.
Yes, above one.
Above one, it becomes something becomes imaginary.
Yeah. So we should care about if this thing.
Oh, yeah,
if the thing is getting imaginary, then we just don't have any roots there. Because in the initial polynomials or all coefficients, they are real numbers, right? And if polynomial with real numbers have imaginary root, which this means that it multiplies with something else and there is no root in the domain. This is a beautiful formula, and now we can observe following thing. So there are two qualitatively different regions. So one region is zero less than C less than one, so C from zero to one. And in this region, almost all modules let's put it simpler, all points give non-unitary modules. And almost all points means that there will be a discrete set of points, which will be very important in the next lecture, which are corresponding to unitary minimum models, where where theory can be made unitary. But this is, I will come back to this at the end of the lecture. And for C greater than one, all modules are unitary. And C equals to one gives rise to many interesting CFTs. It's very interesting and very important domain from different perspectives. I will not discuss this in details. But this is topic for separate course probably. So let's argue that this is indeed true. I will not prove this in details, but I will give idea how this can be proved. So let's start from C greater than one. And apparently this should be split into two cases. One smaller than C smaller than 25, and C is greater than 25. We can use explicit formula for HRC, RS now. It's a bit modified compared to one which we had before, but it's quite simple one. It's basically rewriting of a formula which we had before. I'm going to show that in the region C greater than one, there are no curves CRS, which are just vanishing sets of this. There are no real solutions to this equation. So for the region one smaller than C, smaller than 25, this thing it's imaginary, right? Because numerator here it's positive. One smaller than C smaller than 25, numerator it's positive number, denominator is negative number, so this is imaginary number. So for here, HRS is real. if and only if r equals to s. And yeah, this term, it's just vanishing. So h r s of c, it's equal to 1 minus c over 96. Yeah, this disappears, and we have here just 2 r squared minus 4. And r is integral number greater than equals than 1. Or just, yeah. And this is negative, and this is positive. Therefore, h r s of c should be smaller than 0. And this is not the region which we consider. We only consider region when h greater than 0 and c greater than 0. So we don't have any curves here. When c is greater than 25, we have following thing. So this is just some number, some real number, which is greater than 0. So thing which we are looking for, it's r plus s plus r minus s times k squared, or in other terms, it's r 1 plus k plus s 1 minus k squared. And it's not only greater than 0, it's also smaller than 1. So if c is equal to 25, this is just 0. And if c is greater than 25, this number, if, for example, if c is infinity, this number is 1. And this is monotonic function in this region. So it's between 0 and 1. And yeah, it's easy to see that this is also greater than 4, greater than equals than 4. For r and s, just integral number greater or equal than 1. Because if they both are equal than 1, then this gives exactly 4. Right, because this is like 1 plus k plus 1 minus k, which is 2, square, it gives 4. And if r or s, they're becoming bigger, then this expression can only become bigger. So this is greater than or equal than 4. And also, this factor, it's positive, and this factor is negative. So h r s, it's of c, it's negative. So if you draw this picture, now we have line c equals to 1 here. Here we have h. And in this region, we don't have any no CRS curves. So no, not on any level, no determinant, no cos determinant have any zeros. Which means that if, let's call this region R. So R is h greater than 0, c greater than 1. If at any point of R, series module is unitary, it is unitary everywhere in R. Thank you. So it only remains to see that R, that all the eigenvalues of Kasparov form are positive anywhere in this region. And to see that theory is unitary in R, consider H to infinity limit, and I'm not going to discuss this in much details, but in this limit, there one can see that eigenvalues of SL are determined by diagonal matrix elements. So basically, in this limit, C is more or less irrelevant, and everything is determined by H, and the diagonal matrix elements, they are growing like fast enough so that they dominate all the off diagonal matrix elements, and diagonal matrix elements are quite easy to compute. Leading order in H, it's quite easy to compute. Therefore, and they are positive. So this whole region is good because we don't have any zeros of determinant, and very far away we have unitary theory. So this is unitarity region. So there is like a region zero smaller than C, smaller than one. And in this region, basically these curves, there are lots of CRS curves. So if we start drawing these curves on a plane, we get picture like this is C, this is H, this is C equals to 1, and they are going like this. So they're mostly looking like parabolas, they're not parabolas, but they're looking like, and some of them are touching C equals to 1, and they are like very densely covered in this region, and to show that almost all the points correspond to non-unitary series, one have to observe that any CH can be connected to C greater than one region, by crossing only one CRS with contributing, let's say contributing with odd multiplicity to some determinant of QL and no other CRS contributing to this CR to this QL. So this is like a long and lengthy sentence, and the idea is the following. Let's pick some point here. And this continuous curve, which I'm talking about, it goes there. It goes to the unitarity region. And if I manage to find such L, let's say I pick some L, and I draw only this, only curves which correspond to this particular L. So not all CRS are contributing, but only some of them. Let's say this, let's say that, okay, and let's say this. And if I manage to find such L that between this point and external region, there is only one curve, or crossing of only one curve for this given L, and multiplicity is odd, this means that if determinant is positive here, then inside of this region, determinant is negative. Because of structure of the function, we have product, and if in some region this all this fact like the product of these factors they are given positive number, and then H is crossing boundary, and this multiplicity is odd, then outside, this thing is changing sign, and the whole determinant will be changing sign. Yeah, and in principle, this requires careful analysis of and proof. But the useful observation is the following: notice that curve CRS it touches C equals 1 at HRS equals to 1 fourth R minus S squared. Yeah, it's easy to see just in this formula, just plug in C equals to 1 and basically alpha plus is the same, like here we have square root of 24, which cancels with this square root of 24. And alpha plus minus is equal to plus minus 1. And here we have just, and this also vanishes. So we have just 1 over 4 r minus s squared. This is one observation. And notice also that with product R times S growing, the curve CRS becomes, this growing and R minus S fixed becomes more wide. So if we fix R minus S, then let me draw another picture here. So again, like this is C, this is H, and this is C equals to 1. So we have this point 1 over 4, it's like here, 1 over 4 R minus S squared. And we keep this difference to be fixed, but yeah, the product of R times S, we increase it, which means that first we have curve like this, then we have curve like that, then it's even more and more and more. And which means that more and more points are inside of this curve. So first it's just this domain, then it's this domain, and then it's that domain, and so on and so forth. Which means that more and more points are inside, and it's useful for this consideration, because in each case we can pick point here. So first we can only pick points here, and only crossing this curve we get outside, then this point and that point. And the only thing which remains to notice is the multiplicity of HRS minus H at level L equals to R times S is 1. So in this formula we have this number of Jung diagrams. And in case of L equals to R minus S, this is P of 0, and we have only one Jung diagram of size 0, which is trivial Jung diagram. Let's notice that P of 0 is 1, which is just trivial Jung diagram. And 1 is an odd number. Yeah, so and this means that if we have point here and we have to find such product R times S, that this point it's inside of the curve for CRS, and the previous curve is kind of outside, and multiplicity is 1, so when we are going to unitarity region, we're crossing only one curve. And that's what we were looking for. And yeah, this is like sketch of proof. It's not really proof, but the real proof looks like that. And yeah, since we can also make this difference bigger, we can also shift this like nose of this curve. We can move it upside, so we can cross the whole strip upstairs. So basically that's it. We have like unitarity region which goes to the right from C equals to 1 and with positive H, and all the other things, they are non-unitary. And the last remark, which is like announcement for the next for the next lecture. Even in 0 smaller than C smaller than 1, H greater than 0. Region there are points whose modules can be made unitary. And the picture here is following. We have a highest weight vector H, and we act by our operators in this direction. So let's say that level going in this direction. So we have like L minus one of H. Yeah, let's just draw L minus one. Then we have L minus one squared, L minus two, and blah, blah, blah. So this is like our Verma module. And sometimes we have very special points where theory is non-unitary, but in a way that we have singular vectors. So we have vectors of zero norm. Let's say somewhere here we have vector of zero norm. And apparently it can happen that this thing, it gives rise to another Verma module, which is submodule of this module. And there might be like multiple points like this. So non-unitarity is contained in some submodules, and we can factor that out. So instead of Verma modules, we take their quotients. Let's call them MHC, which is like VHC slash singular vectors. So this is non-unitarity, but it's not too bad in non-unitarity. And for C equals to 1 minus 6 over M, M plus 1, and H, RS, corresponding to this is, would be equal to M plus 1 times R minus MS squared minus 1 divided by 4 M, M plus 1. M, HC are unitary. And these are so-called unitary minimal models. And here, sorry, values of R and S, they are, sorry, R is smaller than M, smaller or equal than 1, and 1 smaller or equal than S, smaller than R. Yeah, so those are some nice situations, and yeah, we will discuss them more next time. But the idea that singular vectors can be modded out and this can rescue unitarity, it's important idea in physics, and those who will be attending string theory classes, they will also see this in a string theory context. But in string theory, it's different setup, but similar idea. Okay. Questions? Comments?